Hello and welcome to another Room with a Review podcast. I'm David again, your host, and this week I'm focusing on the Super Bowl commercials, or some of the Super Bowl commercials that were shown earlier this week, obviously during the Super Bowl. So, for anyone that isn't aware, every year it's a big thing. As part of the Super Bowl, a lot of people gather. And if they're not interested in the actual game itself, they actually really enjoy watching the ads. I feel like this year had some pretty good ads. Years gone by, there's been only one or two that have really stood out. And every now and then, really, really good ones pop up. So this year especially, I thought very interesting ads. And I know that I definitely use ads within the classroom a lot. They're good kind of demonstrations of things. Just this week, I was looking at the role of gender in sport through Nike advertising, and there's a lot you can do with those. So maybe I'll do that as a future episode, perhaps. But as I said, this week I want to focus on the Super Bowl ads, or at least a couple of them. These ads are so, so expensive, and it kind of reminds me a little bit of the Gruen transfer, where they always look at, you know, different types of ads and things like that, obviously, but the pitch segment, where they'd ask people to make their own ads. And this is basically like, I think on the show at least, the pitch was a good opportunity for those advertising agencies to kind of also show the work they can do and put a name to a sort of type of ad. Whereas this is, you know, there'd be advertising companies that work all year getting this right. And so the companies that want their products advertised, obviously willing to spend a lot of money. I did check this up the other day, I forgot the exact number, but a few years ago, for a 30-second ad spot, and some of these ads go for about a minute, a 30-second ad spot cost, was it 20 million? Is that right? I think it was around 20 million. And so we're way over that now. I could be wrong. Let's just double check this. I think it's about 30 million now. It's just crazy. The price it's risen to. Oh, sorry. Only 5.6 million. I don't know where I got 20 million and 30 million from. 5.6 million for a 30-second ad slot. But that's just for the slot alone. So I think the 30 or 20 million stat is the production value as well, often, of a lot of these. So if you want to get a Super Bowl ad, you need basically about 7 or 8 million lying around. Some of these would have been not too expensive to make, but some had huge production value. And some, you know, funny, interesting, various levels of effectiveness. There was a couple that kind of had similar styles to them, which was really odd. So I'll talk about five or six. Six, probably. Two were for junk food type products and had their own sort of thing, very intertextual, very lot of illusion going on. And then we also had two car ads that I'm going to talk about, but also, again, highly intellectual, intertextual. One of them, though, had a similar almost style or approach as one of the junk food ads, which I'll get to in a sec. And then I'll get to the remaining two, which are also about, for lack of a better term, home surveillance systems is maybe what I'll call them, although that's probably not the technical term. So first one I'm going to talk about is the Cool Ranch Doritos ad featuring Sam Elliott, Lil Nas X. Basically, the plot of this one, Sam Elliott playing a cowboy, you kind of get the, what's it from? Wah, 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 woo, woo, woo. Whatever, I forget the movie that's from, that's what I had. But yeah, Sam Elliott playing cowboy, and then he is basically in a Mexican standoff, and Lil Nas X rocks up. Now, I didn't recognize him. It took me, I had to kind of look it up afterwards, who he was. I figured he had a connection to the song and was aware of the song. I didn't really listen to it much. But Old Town Road plays and they have a dance battle. So it's Lil Nas X, who's the singer of Old Town Road. And basically they just have a dance battle. And so it's quite good because Sam Elliott, very almost synonymous with those type of roles, this kind of sheriff dude thing. It was almost dressed the same as he looked in The Big Lebowski. I don't know if that was intentional as well. But in terms of an ad for Doritos, I think, you know, it's not a great ad. It's probably not one I would use in class that much. But I think in terms of being an effective ad, and that's where I might use it, is that it's definitely got a target audience. It's definitely marketing itself to younger people, and it's playing off the popularity of that song. There's going to be an association now between the song Old Town Road and Doritos. So, yeah, I think in terms of the way they went about it, I think they've definitely, you know, found a winning recipe there. That being said, I think that's all it's good for. I wouldn't be using it probably as an example of to show sort of issues, I think, or a lot of these other things. I don't think, even the dance battle was not great because you could tell it wasn't really Sam Elliott dancing and the dancers weren't that amazing. I think they could have done the same premise maybe with something like someone different that could actually dance. I think that would have been pretty good. So it was fine. And again, production value is obviously there. Doritos have put out some pretty good Super Bowls in years gone by. This was not up there for me. But in terms of picking an audience and marketing towards it, nailed it. Absolutely nailed it. Whereas we'll get to some of the others, and I think they kind of maybe just missed their audience a little bit, although the ads are more interesting or funny or memorable in some ways. So yeah, the Doritos Cool Ranch ad, limited effect and limited use for kind of teaching advertising or anything like that, but wasn't completely amiss. It just needed a bit of work, I think. The Sam Elliott thing, for older people, maybe that's their hook. They don't understand who he is. But when you've got all these other things, like I said, I mean, I don't know who Lil Nas X is really. I don't recognize him when he appears on screen. It's only because of the song that I was able to make the connection. So, yeah, I think they could have just tweaked some things there to make it a much better ad. I understand the whole Cool Ranch thing, the setting and all that kind of thing. But go one way or another. Either, like, a lot of it worked together. I just think it was, yeah, if you go and watch the ad, you'll see what I mean about some of it. It just doesn't quite get there. It's a lot of the ideas are in place. The execution kind of doesn't all come together is what I'd say about it. But again, as I said, target audience, perfect. So the next one I want to talk about is the Mountain Dew advertisement, or Mountain Dew Zero, really. I thought this one was really well done. This is, I don't know if it's my favorite ad. It might be. I thought it was really cool. So in an ad for Mountain Dew Zero, we have Bryan Cranston playing the role of Johnny from The Shining, for lack of using his real name, Jack, whatever. And so, yeah, we've got, you know, he's got the axe walking up the stairs and he's chasing this woman and she's in the bathroom and all that stuff. And it's got shot for shot remake and it's so, so good. It's a little bit over the top for Mountain Dew and it's kind of like, okay, we get it. There's no subtlety to it, but it's so good. Like seeing this, like The Shining being remade with Bryan Cranston and it's almost like a Malcolm in the Middle type Hal road that he's playing, not Heisenberg from Breaking Bad. So yeah, I think it's just really cool because you see all these things and they've actually got a lot, like it works pretty well. It's definitely memorable. And then at the end, he appears as the twins with Mountain Dew Zero kind of repeating in the background. And there's also a part where the elevator, which should have been filled with, you know, red blood sort of thing, is filled with the typical green Mountain Dew. And I think it's a really good ad, and the whole way through it just says it's as good as the original, maybe better. So there's a lot of like nice little nods to what it's doing. It's very self-aware. I like it a lot. Bryan Cranston really sells it. As I say, it's more reminiscent of maybe his time as Hal than it is of Heisenberg, but it's so good. It's fantastic. You could just see the production value that went into it, and it works so well. And in my own moment of self-awareness, it actually really made me want to buy the Mountain Dew Zero, which, you know, that's obviously the point of advertising. I think that would be a great ad to use. So you've obviously got the intertextual elements, you've got the narrative, but also just the fact that it's so, like, I think you don't have to have seen The Shining and you would instantly know, yeah, okay, like within moments you recognize that, oh yeah, this is from that movie. And if you don't know what the movie is, very quickly you'd piece it together. He cuts down the door with the axe, puts his face through all of it. It's just so good. There's no kind of big reveal what it's for. Like, it's not like it builds up to something and then twists on you, but it's fine. I don't think it needs it. It works so well. It is probably an ad I would use. And I think, you know, some people may at some point even teach The Shining. I don't know. But I think in terms of, if we want to look at something I was talking about, when I did the Watchmen episode, we've got these collections of texts. I think this is kind of a really nice final piece. Like, again, we could talk about The Shining, the novel, and then obviously the Stanley Kubrick film, but then this would be like another little homage to that. Plus, I think there are a few other random things you could tie in together that have all just come straight out of The Shining. I know, I'm pretty sure The Simpsons have done a few things with it. I'm pretty sure there's part of The Haunting of Hill House that briefly refers to it. Even American Psycho, to an extent, has a little kind of connection to it. So I think in terms of that, like, it's just a really good way to explore meaning and how you can reinvent a text to have a completely different meaning. I think satire slash parody, there's a lot of avenues to explore. Argument in terms of advertising is probably not this ad, but there is a few others that we'll get to that do that. But I guess that whole tagline of as good as the original, maybe better, also works really, really well. So I think this ad so much better than the Doritos one. But I think the Doritos one, again, target audience, perfect. The Mountain Dew one, though, it obviously appealed to me, but let's look at a lot of things that had a line for that to happen. Big Shining fan, first of all, not only the book, but also the Kubrick film. I also like horror, so even if I wasn't super keen on The Shining, I think this would be cool. Obviously, the right age to have watched Malcolm in the Middle and Breaking Bad, which people a little bit younger wouldn't have. Like, the just timing of all, and maybe, I don't want to, you know, be too discriminatory here, but, like, people that may be a little bit older that didn't see Malcolm in the Middle, who don't have that same recognition of him as that kind of character, this weird kind of odd dude, and maybe only recognize him from Breaking Bad, it's kind of like a little bit of, they're like, oh, what's he doing this? I think that's, like, I was obviously the target audience, and, you know, being a sports fan as well, absolutely nailed it with that. But that's only not a small part, but I think that's only a portion of the whole people watching this. And I don't think they actually would have grabbed some of the more casual fans or people, as I say, outside a certain kind of age range. But I think overall, I mean, slightly older people maybe than I am would get The Shining stuff, obviously. I think maybe that's their way in, but for someone like me, like, I was perfect target audience there, but I don't think they really nailed it. I think that The Shining, there are a lot of people my age that would not have seen The Shining, or they'd go, oh yeah, I know what, I recognize those scenes and those things, but I don't know what it's from. Not immediately, like I do. And I know a few other people my age that would, but a lot wouldn't. So I think, yeah, there's definitely a little bit of room there where they just maybe missed the target audience, but such a good ad. Definitely watch that one. That is definitely one you could teach in class. I think it's so good for so many different reasons, as I say. Like, and it's really up to, because it's only about a minute long, there are so many different ways you could use it too. If you do advertising type units, which I know some people do, that's definitely one area you might want to explore, because I think it's fantastic in terms of a lot of what it's doing. Also, though, as I said, anything to do with intertextuality, if you come up with The Shining or horror at all, you know, it just really caps off how you can change the tone of something. I was at a event run by Sydney University 2 years ago, 3 years ago now, where they had a couple of GIFs and you could put them together, and they showed us the remake of the Titanic trailer, making it a horror thing, which, go look that up if you just grab Titanic horror trailer on YouTube, it'll pop up. But just, I think it's a really good demonstration of how you can just change the tone of something very easily. So I think it's really cool. I think that ad was probably my favorite of the lot. And the next one then has a similar sort of approach in terms of using one of these older movies, is the Jeep Groundhog Day ad. So this one, you know, it's got Bill Murray and the same actors for Ned and the mayor, and they're pretty much the only ones we see. And basically he wakes up, Bill Murray does, and everything's the same. The clock ticks over 6 o'clock and Sonny and Cher are singing I Got You Babe. And he's like, oh no, what again? Here we go. And he goes about it and he's kind of realizing that he's back in this. And again, it's kind of like a, okay, is he playing Phil or is it just Bill Murray going, I have to reenact this again? Because, yeah, you kind of, there's no discernible difference really between which is which, but that's okay. I think this ad is pretty good. I like it a lot. I think it's a lot more fun than maybe the others. And I think there's a lot more subtlety to it than the others. It doesn't just, hey, here's the product. Make sure you understand this is the product, which is the problem with the Mountain Dew one. So he goes through the town. He's like, oh no, everything's the same. It's happening again. I don't want to do this. The groundhog's there with the mayor. And then he sees his brand new Jeep. So he gets in the Jeep and then he takes the groundhog and drives off. And then basically the premise is that he has so much fun. He does different stuff every day. And that's pretty much what the tagline is as well, is that every day is a new adventure with a Jeep. It's just really well done. Bill Murray is just so casual about it. As I said, it's kind of like a, I think he almost became that character in real life, or that character became him. I don't know. It as good as that role was for him, it was perfect casting and he played it so well. But yeah, he's just kind of taken on a lot of that persona now. He played a little bit of that in Zombieland. And so, yeah, I think this ad was pretty good too. It was definitely much more subtle. And it means that, again, you recognize Groundhog Day. And I think for Americans especially, majority of the people watching Super Bowl would be like, yep, Groundhog Day, got it. Even if you didn't, if you hadn't seen Groundhog Day, which I know a lot of people haven't, it's not as recognizable as some of these other things. I think The Shining's more recognizable now. But because Super Bowl was taking place on Groundhog Day, I thought this was really, really clever. And that's a little detail that, you know, over time, if people look at this ad, we'll just miss. But again, perfect for intertextuality, character, a lot of these things, narrative, argument, all of it. Like, there's so much to go through with this ad. Like, it's this one and The Shining one. I think if you showed them together, what a perfect way to kind of demonstrate exceptional advertising. They may not be the most perfect ads and the most brilliant ads ever made, but I think just, not flawless, but textbook. They're absolutely exactly what you want an ad to be. Clever, funny, gets the message across, pretty much hits the audience, has a lot of other things going on, and is quite rich in and of itself. Too many ads don't have that. They're just straight up, simple, cheap, and that's fine. I know when I taught a couple of ads last year, we also discussed the whole 5-second YouTube ads and how that has really changed things. I mean, compared to a effectively $12 million for the time it takes, these ads are all 1 minute, $12 million we're looking at versus a 5-second YouTube ad, $12 for a 1 minute ad, 5 seconds. It's remarkable how advertisers have had to adapt to those things. But yeah, we're talking about a lot of the same things for these ads so far. It's that intertextuality is driving them all. And the next couple don't so much have the same thing. They kind of take a different shift. So the next one is another car ad. This one's for Hyundai. I think it was a Sonata, which maybe is a bit of a problem that I couldn't identify the exact type of car. But this was really, really funny. I like this one a lot too. And again, definitely an American ad. I don't know that this one, you'd have to kind of understand a lot of the background, which most people probably would, but it's an interesting choice in the actors are in it. So it's the Hyundai Smart Park ad. And if you couldn't tell from that, it's entirely taking place in Boston. They've got a lot of recognizable Bostonians. There's Chris Evans, famous for playing Captain America, obviously, and they talked about him with Knives Out. It's also got John Krasinski from The Office. It's got Rachel? From, I recognize, she's from Saturday Night Live, and she was on 30 Rock. She played a lot of those minor like roles appearing throughout the whole kind of different seasons. Her name's going to bug me. But yeah, those three are kind of the main ones. And you got David Ortiz, who played for the Red Sox, and there's another guy that comes out. I don't recognize his face, but I recognize his face, but I don't recognize his name. And basically, John Krasinski's trying to park, and Chris Evans is like, oh, you can't park there, dude. You know, there's no space. There's, nah, I got smart park. And so they put on that, they really, really hit the Boston accents really hard. And I think it works so well. There's even a wicked smart line. It's coming straight out of Good Will Hunting. And that's pretty much all this ad was missing, is just one of the Afflecks or Matt Damon. I think Boston is a really interesting case study for things like having a geography of film, because I think you've got not only Good Will Hunting, but you've also got Spotlight, and you've got The Town, and you've got The Departed, and there's something else as well that just slipped my mind. But it's definitely got, and even like Stephen King has, you know, a lot of text coming from that kind of region, the New England region in the northeast of USA. And so, yeah, I think you could really, really do a fascinating study of Boston through film. And having been there as well, there are a lot of things that, you know, it's really, really stand out from it. During the ad, they talk about, oh, we're able to park at all these places. So they say like the harbor, Foxborough. So the harbor, obviously Boston Harbor, very, very famous Boston Tea Party incidents and things like that. Fascinating place. But also Foxborough, which is where the New England Patriots play. So a bit of the NFL nod there. Yeah, I think just really, really, really good ad. Just a lot of fun. And they're obviously making fun of themselves. So again, a lot of self-awareness, but just so funny. Just for how much they're really layering the accent there. So I think that was really cool. I think that ad was a good, really, really good job of, yeah, it didn't do it over the top, because instead of worrying about the actual product they were trying to advertise, you were just kind of laughing along with them at themselves and their accent and how it all works. It actually probably wasn't a very expensive ad to make, other than the fact that I had to pay all these actors and people to be in it. But the setting was very small and minimal. They didn't have any like CGI type stuff. They didn't have to remake all these things like the Mountain Dew and the Cool Ranch and the Jeep ad, where they had to do a lot of extra scenery and shoots and things like that. And again, they all had pretty big names in them too. So this one, I think they spent the money, the budget on the people, didn't spend much more else. The product was there, but you weren't focusing on it. I think this was a really excellent example of an ad, but the limitation is a lot of students not going to have that recognition of the accent. And you could do this with 7s, 8s, 9s, 10s, 11s, 12s. And if you, I mean, obviously, if you've seen Good Will Hunting, I think this is a good ad just to kind of show, just to like kind of as a bit of a laugh with the Boston accent thing, which, when I've taught Good Will Hunting before, students kind of go like, oh, is that really what they speak like? I say, yeah, they do in Massachusetts. So yeah, I think this ad was pretty good. It was a little bit shorter, but that was fine. You got the gist very quickly. Just the fact they kept saying smart pack and everyone kept saying it was really, really like, it didn't get over the top. It was quite funny. I thought it was really well done. So the next one is, There's two more to go, and I think I'll maybe do the other humorous one before I finish with one that's, when I get to it, we'll unpack that. So the next one I want to talk about, though, is the Alexa ad featuring Ellen DeGeneres and Portia de Rossi. This one I thought was pretty cool. As much as I am resistant to these, as I call them at the start, home surveillance devices, I don't think that's what they call, but they concern me, and for good reason, I'm sure you'll all find. Yeah, whether it's an Alexa, which is the Amazon product, or the Google Home Mini, I think there's another one too. I mean, Siri, I don't use Siri, things like that. Maybe I'm paranoid and I need a tinfoil hat, but I don't like the idea that they can spy on me and record my information, and that's exactly what they do. There is proven evidence of that. So I'm not about to invite one of these things to do that in my life. So this ad, though, I will still talk about it because I think it was a pretty good ad. I laughed a little bit. About a minute long. And so Ellen is calling out to Portia, say, oh, are you ready? And then Portia's like, yep, no problem. And Ellen's like, oh, Alexa, I forget what she said, do that. And then she said, I wonder what people did before Alexa. And then we kind of go in this montage of different eras throughout history. So we kind of steadily progress back in time. It's quite humorous, which suits both Ellen and Portia de Rossi. And so they're not appearing throughout, but kind of start with like a queen, like, oh, Alexa, turn the temperature. And so there's this little maid that just has to adjust a thermostat. And then you've got, you know, Alexa, tell me a joke. And it's a jester. And we progressively go through all these different things. Alexa, Alex, what's the news? And then there's this little boy selling newspapers and shit, like, you know, extra, extra. And he's saying, it doesn't matter, it's all fake. So again, a little bit of, like, it's just pretty funny. And I thought it was pretty good. So, and then in the end, we come back to Ellen and Portia in the car. And it's just very funny. I think this ad, it really, I think, as I said already, I don't want one of these products. It's not for me. If you are one of those people that wants to use it, my sister has one, good on her. Fair enough. But I think in terms of being a very effective ad, it was, because that is a much more memorable ad. It shows what the product can do without, a little bit like the Hyundai Smart Park one, where, and every time I say Smart Park now, I'm going to have to really either lean into the accent or not do it at all. But the Alexa one, it's definitely one that will be memorable. It's not going to just leave my memory anytime soon. I thought it was very, very funny. As I say, it kind of reminds you of what the product was all the way, and yet you stopped focusing on that being the product because it was people doing these things that the Alexa can do. And I think humanizing the technology was probably a really good approach here. Because it gave it that personal touch. I thought it was really good. And it was kind of just like, hey, we've always had people that do these sort of things for you, but now you just obviously don't have the money to pay for those people, so buy an Alexa. And I think the underlying message there was really good. I think there was enough subtlety to get away with it. And again, we've got all those exact same things I've been talking about with every other ad, all these intertextual components. It's fantastic. Really, really well done. So the final ad, though, in comparison to Alexa, oh boy, was the Google Loretta ad. This ad is a fantastic ad. It's probably the best of them all. But I cannot in good conscience recommend it. It scares me. Because for everything Alexa did with humanizing the technology, this Google one reminded me exactly why I'm suspicious and careful around it. Again, call me paranoid, call me old, you know, whatever. As I said, there's good evidence that this is what these products do. This product was demonstrating exactly what my fears were. And so on the one hand, it's really, really concerning. On the other hand, it's so emotional, so beautiful. I honestly don't know how to feel about this ad. On the one hand, I think it's really, really good. It's a great ad, and it really shows that, like, Google's trying to be human. And you need to watch this ad for yourself. I'm torn as to whether I'll ever use it in class. I think studying dystopias is a really good opportunity to use it there. Same with, I mean, if you've ever, it's like almost Hal out of Space Odyssey. She does one Space Odyssey. Or if you've ever seen Moon, the technology that's on the ship in Moon, where it's kind of deceiving these humans, and it's like, yep, no problem, and it's used really to monitor you. It scares me in that it's like this artificial intelligence that would really turn on you. I haven't seen Her, and I feel like maybe I would need to watch Her for this to connect maybe to that instead. But boy, this ad scared me so much and pretty much also made me cry out of just sheer emotion. So massive problematic ad for me. I don't know how I feel about it. It's, man. So let's actually get into it. So basically what it is, this ad, there's this old man and he's Googling, how do I remember something? And then Google's answer is like, oh, you know, you remember the small details about something and record them, and that'll activate these memories. And so then we get him looking at a series of photos of him and his wife. And he starts by, oh man, I might cry now. Just even recounting it. And he basically starts by saying, oh, and he brings up this photo and he says, oh, I remember when we went here and this is what happened. And he does that for a series of different photos. He says, oh, she really hated this thing. Or she really liked the smell of that. But each time he talks about one of these photos and has a little comment about it, just the words appear on the screen. There's no voice. And this is what, in contrast to the Alexa ad, which humanizes the technology and it kind of makes you go, okay, yeah, that's okay. It's kind of just friendly and it's what something we've always had. In this case, just the words, okay, I'll remember that for you. Which, oh boy, as emotional as this ad is, that's really, really concerning. Because it's literally saying, I'll record all this information about you. And I get that it's really sweet. And this man wants to really remember his wife who's passed away. And it's really, really, really upsetting in that sense. Like, it's so emotional. And yet, what happens in it is it's just this technology saying, yep, I'll continue to spy on you, is the way I look at it. And that is exactly what these technologies, my concern is with them. And as I said, like, I get that they really were trying to, like, it's a really great idea that, you know, if you are someone older and you don't want to forget things, especially, like, you know, if you've got a dead husband or wife or family member, you don't want to forget those things. But boy, the potential right there for it to remember all sorts of other stuff. Yeah, I'm skeptical, but it frightens me so much. I just would worry about what it's doing. So, yeah, this ad is exceptionally made, but that little creepy text, it is like something out of Black Mirror. I'm pretty sure there's a Black Mirror episode where it's just like recording everyone and the things they do and using it against them later on. It's messes with me so much. But this ad is phenomenal. Like, it really is. It's the fact that it was pretty much able to almost bring me to tears. And again, just even recounting it had that effect on me. It's so good. It's the one that doesn't use intersexuality. And there is definitely, though, a perspective and a character and narrative and all these things, the style, the symbols. It's phenomenal. Like, just so good. It's brilliantly executed. It's a lovely ad, except for that whole overarching Skynet fear that I've got, you know. Yeah, I just, as much as I love this ad, I hate it too because of what it is. And so here's the other kicker. The reason why this ad is also very emotional is the was it Google employee or the advertising exec employee, or it's one and the same, who came up with it. I think it was their grandfather who they based it on, and he actually voiced it himself, talking about his actual photos and his actual wife. And that's what makes it really emotional. And boy, the fact that Google could just manipulate people like that, I'm not surprised at all. Oh man, this ad is so good and yet so concerning. As I said, like, there's so many movies that warn us about this whole thing, this cautionary aspect. And yet, here it is, staring us in the face, and people are like, yeah, I love it, yay. I don't know. Again, if you want to do that in your own life, go for it. It's not for me. No way am I doing that. They scare me too much. So those are the six ads. I want to talk about the two Alexa, Google home devices, your two car ads, Hyundai Smart Pack, and the Jeep Groundhog Day, and then also the Mountain Dew Shining and the Cool Ranch Doritos, Big Town Road, Old Town Road, whatever it's called. Those ads. I think each show something in and of themselves, and I think they're a good exploration of effective ads, and maybe that's where you could use some of them as like getting your students to think about why these ads are not effective or what could they do better. I think all of that together did a lot. So yeah, I think those six different ads from this year, definitely something to keep in mind for different teaching things. It's been, as I said, a few years since we've had six ads of this caliber that are really, really easily adapted into a classroom. A lot of the time, they're very American-based. It's typically dominated by fast soft drink products, whether it's Coke, Pepsi, things like that. I think actually Pepsi doesn't let Coke advertise because it's the halftime show is sponsored by Pepsi. So yeah, that's why you get Mountain Dew and things like that. And I think Doritos is owned by Pepsi, if I'm not mistaken. So that's why they always get good advertising slots. They probably get a cheaper deal for that. Maybe that's part of Pepsi's agreement with sponsoring halftime. Is they say, yeah, we'll pay for all of this stuff, but we get ads potentially. But some of these other ads, really, really well done. And as I said, definitely good for studying different things. As I talk about each one. So there you are with those six Super Bowl ads for 2020. And as always, the second or the last section of this podcast is War and Peace. Continuing to stay on track. I do have to catch up on a chapter today, but that's okay. I don't feel so bad about that. As I said, the weekends are my chance to do that. I've just got to keep it at 7 chapters a week, 8 if I can, which I look like I'll be doing this week. I do need to get cracking on some other book or something because I struggled kind of a bit throughout this week as to what I would talk about in the main part of this, but War and Peace came up. Weirdly, it came up multiple times throughout the week where I was talking about someone who's a history teacher and she was doing elective history unit and she was talking about film topics and stuff with me about what she could use for War and Peace, exploration of that and things like that and what I've done with it before in other contexts. And so we're talking through it. And she said, oh, you know, there's a TV series called War and Peace. And I said, oh, is it based on the book? She goes, oh, I don't know. We had a look at it. Yes, it is. So it was weird, just very, very weird that it came up during the week, just naturally without being provoked. It came up somewhere else too. I can't remember where. But anyway, I think it's continuing to be good. I like where it's progressed to this week. As I said last week, it's kind of hard. There's not a lot for me to kind of update each week, but there were some really good quotes in this last little bit that I read, and I found them really fascinating. What was one of them? Oh, two things, right? So one of them was, I thought it was really funny. I thought it was really well done. This whole idea, oh, it must be three things. Must have been three things since the last episode. Anyway, sorry. So the first one, actually, I'll go back a little bit further, is I think I talked last week about how I was disappointed that it was still very misogynistic and females weren't given any choices and they were just expected to marry these people from high society. And then in kind of like a bit of a 180, the character that's kind of at the center of all that, her father says, I will respect your decision. You can do what you want, choose to marry him or not. And then she decides not to marry this guy. I thought that was amazing. And I was like, well, I'm glad I was proven wrong. I think that's really good. Made me much happier. My conscience was salved a little bit. So I thought that was really cool. I still think, you know, there's a little bit where it could have gone further with some of those things and heightening the power and importance of some of the female characters, but overall really, really good. And then not long after that, this is the part that made me laugh, was one of the characters had been fighting. He'd written home and there was a bit of to-do about that, but he was recounting a battle that he was in, and Tolstoy's narration basically just says, oh, as all men do, he's going to embellish this tale. And I thought that was really, really funny, that because basically all he'd done was ridden around and looked at some cannons and hadn't really been in a battle, like he hadn't killed anyone, not really, like, yeah, he'd just kind of been there. The battle was kind of pretty basic and straightforward, not much happened. But as I said, and I thought this was so spot on, it was that this man, he was basically just going to exaggerate some of the details and make it sound much more dramatic and as though he played a really important role. And I thought that was really, really funny. I thought it was so spot on because it's exactly what most people do. And it's like, hey, tell us about when you did this thing. And there's always exaggeration and like there's a bit of embellishment and dramatization of it. I thought it was great. It was fantastic. I thought that was really, really funny. So I liked that it did that. I thought it was good. And then the third part, what was the third thing that really stood out? Oh, the third thing that stood out. So the soldiers were meeting the Tsar And there was like two or three chapters in a row where it was just, we love the Tsar, we would die for him. I'm filled with such passion that I'm seeing him. I would dedicate my life to him, anything for this country. It was very, very, like, absolutely complete loyal passion, piety for the Tsar and Russia. It was a little bit odd. It kind of just came out of nowhere. There wasn't really a build up to it, and then it just happened, and it was like over the space of a few chapters, it just kept going on and on about it, which was fine. I thought, you know, that is kind of what I expected. I think there's nothing wrong with that. And I believe that that's going to be much more central to part of the novel's title, War and Peace, is that on the one hand, you're dedicated to fighting for this cause and this person, but at the same time, you are not really dedicated to that. You don't really want to fight either. So I think that's where it's going to go. I've really tried to avoid as much as I can about it. But yeah, I think it's still going really well. I'm hoping to crack on a little bit on this rainy weekend when I can't do much outside, as much as my grass needs cutting and mowing. And it's just been shooting up over the last few weeks, since I've been able to last mow it, because by the time I'm getting home and things like that, it's too dark or it's been raining for much of this week. There's been enough sun that it's had moments to grow rapidly before I've had a chance to get at it. So instead of being able to do that this weekend, I will try to push on through War and Peace and get ahead of myself a little bit even more. If I can get 10 chapters this week, that would be great. So thank you, everyone. This is a slightly longer episode than some of the others, but yeah, I'm really enjoying it. Again, if you have suggestions of texts or maybe you just want to ask questions, you can find me at edudavetion on Twitter. That's edudavetion. Please, by all means, let me know if you listen, have any thoughts. And you can find this both on Anchor and Spotify. Thanks.